you do your thing. All right, there you go.
Hey, nerds and dorks, welcome back. We're the Hype Benders. I'm Pete.
I'm Dan.
I'm Joshua.
God damn.
There's Joshua and Sean, and we're now back with Avatar Book 2, which is Earth.
Book 2!
Today we're going to be talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3. So that's Avatar State, where my brief recap of that is Earth General's a dickhead, gives everyone PTSD. Episode 2, Cave of Lovers. I think that's just self-explanatory.
Is it?
And I think so. I could go into it.
I wrote Aang Gang versus hippies.
Yes, actually, that's accurate. And then return to Omashu, and all I wrote for that to describe it was like, I can't wait to hear Sean talk about this episode.
Oh, man. I want a boomy box.
All right. Well, let's start with episode one, The Avatar State. Josh, what did you like, dislike, you know, your general feelings of it, since you're usually the most negative of us? Let's start with you.
I hate to disappoint, but like my first thought, and Sean, I've talked about this a little bit, but is this the same show, or did they fire the entire writing staff and start over? Because like, this was actually good. Like, big spoiler for the other episodes we're going to talk about, like, yeah, this is a much better show than the entire first season has led me to believe it would be.
Kind of glad to hear you say that, because I was feeling that same way, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, it was a lot better. This one, like, it's funny because there's parts of this that reminded me of some of the things I didn't like any other ones, like the fact that, like, there was some silly stuff. I still sometimes have a hard time figuring out exactly what age group they were going for, even though it's probably not the same age group that ended up falling in love with this show, because it just gets sillier than I would think preteens would be into. But I know a lot of my friends who liked it and fell in love with the show were about between probably 10 and 13 when they watched it. But it also, I think, just wrapped it up a lot better. I do have one huge question I'm going to pose to probably Sean, but if anyone else has an answer.
Oh.
The thing that confused me about this show was they were doing the whole detective thing, and they discovered all the weird clues that, like, the shoes weren't the right size. And the,
That's not the first episode.
That's the wrong episode, bud.
Which one is that?
Yeah, you're way ahead.
Yeah, you're...
Yeah. We're talking about the episode
where they're trying
the...
to get him into the Avatar State.
Yeah,
oh, crap! General. Right, that was a different Avatar State episode.
Yeah.
There's more of a past lives regression episode.
Oh. Well, then... Oh, fuck.
Do you still have
me? Way to ruin everything, me.
Boromir thinks we should use the Avatar
zero,
State.
Zero here.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. See, even
not
the,
our best.
The quick description that you threw at me even confused me on that one. Well, okay, then for better or for worse, I wasn't even taking notes this time because I actually just enjoyed watching the show that I kind of forgot to take notes.
Whoa.
So yeah, I got the order messed up. What was it? Oh, so this was the one right where the guy was just like really trying to screw him over and get him to fight.
Yeah, it's just triggering PTSD for the whole Aang Gang.
Oh, that's what you meant by that.
He was
okay,
he was trying to get him to Hulk out. And the problem is you don't want to Hulk. Yeah, anybody who's seen the Hulk or knows the basic rules of the Hulk knows that's not how this works, and it's a bad idea.
Yeah, it was also weird because all the characters, I think this is the first time where I really felt like all the characters were being who I kind of knew they were supposed to be based on season one, but often annoyed me because I thought they either did it too ham-fisted or just annoyingly. Like I think it did a much better job of balancing like a lot of these real-world situations that get pretty heavy with like a kid's sensibility, which a lot of people have told me is what's great about the show. The fact that like Aang was like, sure, I'll join the Avatar State because yeah, there's a war going on and people are dying and I have to do something now. And I know that I'm like supposed to do it in this proper order, but like maybe we can't wait.
Yeah, I like the little like the guilt that he had.
And then Katara gets all fucking annoying in her Katara way of like, oh, but you have to do it the right way. And he's like, yeah, whatever. People are dying. And then they try it, and she's right in that they have to do it the right way, even though people are dying. But I think it's still good that this episode happened because they kind of, they learned that the hard way. And what it means is that while they now know that they have to train Aang properly, you know, through earth and then fire, and then he can take on the Fire Lord and everything, it's still like, is going to weigh on them that like the longer it takes them to do that, people are dying, there's a war going on. So like, he has to do it the proper order, but they need to speed the fuck up too.
There's also a whole subplot about tearing down Zuko and like his sister coming and taking over and like all that. That's
yeah, I love that. Like, and I know Pete, you must love this too. That there's always shit happening now in this show. They're never like just focusing on some monster of the week bullshit that doesn't matter. Like, well, they did in season one. It's like they're constantly showing you all the characters now, so there's always plot movement.
Yeah, I agree and disagree with you, but one of the things that, again, you called this in the very first episode of the first season, Josh, is that I loved about the introduction of the sister, her new little troop of soldiers, is that their armor is now my new favorite. Like, it's just, like, they're the, like, the Senate guard. You know, like, they just look so cool. Obviously, I need to just talk about, I'm sure we're all going to talk about this, but the fact that she's bending lightning.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty sweet.
Okay, another big question. I thought that would be air.
Yeah, I thought that would be air too, but I guess it's fire.
I guess it's heat. Right?
And the other really cool thing about it is that clearly Iroh fucking knows how to deal with that. Like, Iroh, like, grabbing that and channeling it was just like that one moment in, I think it was episode two, where Kenobi, like, gets the Force lightning with his lightsaber, and you're like, oh shit, that's how you deal with that. Like, we've never seen anybody who knew how to deal with that before, and it was, like, a huge revelation. It was that same kind of, like, okay, this guy's been here, you know?
Yeah.
He knows how to deal with this.
But Azula definitely seems like she's mastered it more, though, incredibly frightening, considering how strong we've seen Iroh.
But we just learned so much about Iroh in that quick second, where you're like, where's he been? Because you notice that he wasn't like, holy fuck, what is her lightning? What is this power I need to warn Zuko? He just like brushed it off.
Instinctually.
Yeah.
And like, now you know that he's like, oh, she can do that. And I've seen that before and I know how bad that is.
Yeah.
And
Well, he grabbed it in season one.
He's a boss.
And redirected it. So like he knows it's possible.
Yeah, but that was like lightning from the sky.
Right.
And he looked genuinely surprised from that. But like this is one of the things that I think why people love this show is that like right here we're also getting like what is going to be the character progression of Zuko. Like I feel like while yes there was character development of Katara and Aang and Sokka still being the comic relief, I feel like Zuko in the subplot was like the most interesting. There was like the most depth and like it really expanded the world in a subplot, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's good that they're really taking a while and taking their time with his story and his change. He's not, you know, he's not coming out of what he's been in as far as emotionally and what he's been taught, you know, majority of his life so quickly. It does, you know, he'll go like two steps forward and he'll take like a step back and, you know, Iroh's there to help him, and it's not always like 100%, you know, Iroh going, oh yeah, here, like, I just told you this wise old saying, and like, you get it now.
The whole, like, him wanting to go back to his dad, and that his sister, like, knew that, you know, his sister's clearly a fucking sociopath.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was rough. That was really,
and she's like, oh, he wants you to come home. Yeah, and then, oh, the prisoners are on board, and it was like, oh, yeah.
And then Zuko yeets that guy.
She definitely killed that guy, right? Like she.
Oh, 100% he's dead.
That dude is dead as shit.
Yeah.
Is there anything you didn't like about this episode, Sean?
There wasn't. But there is a revelation I had in starting the new season. And there's a couple of these that keep happening. But this was a big one to me. And I'm curious if anyone else caught it, because we managed to get all the way through season one and nobody brought it up. If you did catch it, I only realized it in this episode, and this blew my mind. Katara is Anne fucking Veal.
I don't know who Anne Veal is.
I don't know who that is.
Nobody.
You mean the actress?
No.
Yeah.
It's the same actress from
the
rest of
the I mentioned that several podcasts ago.
I totally glossed over it. I did not realize.
that's the voice actor's name, is what you're saying.
No, it was the
Anne Veal is her name in Arrested Development. I forgot her real name, so I called her like Anne Egg because that was a joke in Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Right, yeah. I just didn't know who the, you know, I haven't watched that show, so I don't know who that was.
Yeah.
Mae
Whitman.
Yeah, she plays a character who's
she was also in Scott Pilgrim. For anyone who doesn't get this reference, she was also in Scott Pilgrim. She was the evil ex-girlfriend in Scott Pilgrim.
Right.
So yeah, she was super, super bonkers hot in Scott Pilgrim to make up for the fact that her character in Arrested Development, like her whole thing is that she's just completely forgettable.
We've had this conversation before. All right. Yes. Dan, what is your revelation?
They told us in this episode that he can't be killed in the Avatar state or else he won't reincarnate.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, that ups the stakes a lot.
Definitely immediately drop that in the first episode of the season to come back later.
I love that because it took it away the deus ex machina of the half the first season.
Right. Also, how did he know that? Like, how do you find something like that out?
I don't know. There's like, what, like a 300,000 of these fucking people? I'm sure, like, you know, they can all talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. But and I mean, again, Sean, you forget. This is where you go down this rabbit hole of like, but why? And this is where I'll say it. This is a kid's show. And while I think it has done a lot of things in the first season very poorly under the guise of, but it's a kid's show, which I think is a lazy excuse. But one thing I will defend it for being a kid's show is you only have to explain so much to kids. With a kid's show, you can say, here's how things are. And kids will go, that's how it is. I mean, I mentioned this in the past in the podcast, but I was talking about this to my wife yesterday about how in a kid's show, like in Transformers, every other episode was like, these power crystals are the greatest power on Earth, and I will get them and return to Cybertron and defeat the Autobots. And then Optimus Prime would be like, oh, we can't let him get these power crystals or it's the greatest power on Earth. And then, like, they'd thwart the Decepticons. And then we'd ignore those power crystals forever, and the next week it'd be like, this special power tree is the most important tree on Earth, and I'll use it to defeat the Autobots. Like, you can just tell kids this is important, and they believe it. Or, like, this is a factor that exists, and they just buy it. So I don't think you have to go down this giant rabbit hole of, like, but how did he know that? He knows it. He's the Avatar. Now we know that the Avatar has a weakness, and that's important.
But I like the house, though. I like the you know, the Marvel no prize.
I have a no prize answer for this. Okay.
But they're not necessary, is what I'm saying.
Wait, let's hear. I want to hear the no prize.
Okay, so my question is that, like, how would you learn something like that without dying? That was the question. It's like, without him dying, how would he know that he was able to die in that state, right?
Well, I've got an explanation for that. I mean, I'm fully okay accepting that it's just explained for the purposes of, we're making a show, here's the rules to up the stakes. But
because we said so.
Everybody's in the spirit world, and the spirits probably have a lot of knowledge. I assume gods, and you know, they would know everything, I guess. So, you know, that's kind of where my brain goes as far as that.
Yeah, that was my thought too, was like when he learned it the first time. Like, right, you know, the first Avatar that learned to do that, there was probably some spirit that's like, okay, but if you do this, end of the line, right? That's your downside.
I can even, since we're talking about this now, it's a bit of a jump ahead to another episode, the next one, the Lovers one. But we learned in there that the first Earthbenders learned it from those mole badger things. So to Dan's point, it could be that this is stuff the spirits already know. They taught the Avatars and the Benders how to be who they are. So they would also know, like, by the way, keep an eye on this because this is a thing that has killed. Because maybe there are spirits who have died in that way. So they can extrapolate that humans and Avatars would the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I want to move on to the next one, but I just don't let me forget about that point you just made about the learning of the bending. Is there anyone who didn't like this episode?
No, I really didn't have any issues with this episode. Like, I dug this one.
But usually if you're a yes, then Dan's a no.
True. So I was wondering about that myself.
that's true.
Why I was like, okay, well, Josh kind of liked it, so Dan was shit on this.
No, I thought it was good. It was very solid. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that I didn't even hate the guy trying to put Aang into the Avatar state. I think...
No, he had his reasons.
Again, I'll keep pointing at season one for being trash because I'm not going to forget about that. I think they wouldn't have written it as well. They would have just made him a solid bad guy. But I like in this one, yeah, he's ambiguous. It's like, yeah, it's shitty what he's trying to do to Aang and he's exploiting the Avatar, but his people are dying, so...
Yeah, well, that's what makes, like, all stories, in my opinion, like, good, is the gray, right? Like, so you've got your clear good guys, you've got your clear bad guys, and then there's the guys in the gray, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care whether it's Star Trek, you got Q, you know, like, Star Wars, you've got the bounty hunters and the Hutts, you know, like, they're bad guys, but they're, like, they're willing to help both sides, the pirates, you know?
Well, you could even have bad guys who are inarguably bad, like, I mean, a good, for example, is Darth Vader. He is a bad guy, no arguments, but we learned his reasons, and you can empathize with him, but it does not excuse anything he does.
But it was great, even afterwards, the soldiers were like, oh, do you want us to still escort you to Amashu?
Yeah,
and they're like, no, we're cool. We're cool.
That's one of the things I really loved about this was this episode is, again, like, after seeing the movie, which is so fucking bad, that the first fight scene that we as the hype benders see after watching that movie is the Earthbender general, like, wrecking fucking shop. Like,
yeah, that was...
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
He was doing badass... Like, when he was pulling Katara into the dirt, just by flexing his hand, I was like, oh...
Well, that's actually one other thing that I was going to, and maybe I'll end this discussion of this episode on, was something that I did like about the movie, and I know there wasn't much, that I feel like this season's already doing better than the first season, is I liked how, remember I said in the movie how they said, let's start a revolution, and that's why they were stopping in each town? Yeah. I feel like this one sets up a much better premise for them stopping into towns. Because the last one, like I said, one of the things I hated was they were like, we have to get to the Northern Water Kingdom. They gave us no concept of how long that would take. And then every time they would take long breaks and get really waylaid, like the fortune teller episode, where you're like, why are you fucking around with this? You have a job to do. You need to keep going to where you're going. Every time they delayed from their mission, it was aggravating to me. Now we know they're looking for an Earthbender teacher. They don't just know where to go and they don't just know where to find him. So now they have a solid reason to stop and in every Earthbending town until they find the teacher that they need, which is... a much better plot motivator.
In season one's defense, though, they didn't, like, the characters didn't learn that they have a timeline until like 8 to 10 episodes in.
Yeah, but still, so, why, like, fuck around at all? Like, you know, you have the Avatar, and he has to
because
learn.
They're kids.
Yeah, they're children.
Time is, like, as a 40-year-old man, time means a lot more to me than it did when I was 18.
I'm still gonna say that's kind of weak, though, compared to this.
Anyways, all right.
The first season could have just been
Josh, shut up.
We'll start a revolution, and that would have been it. So that would have been a better reason.
I want to end it on one quick thing.
Sure.
Fire knives. That was cool.
Fire knives. All right. That did fucking rule. Oh, and the cutting off of the hair, like, clearly
that's
ceremonial, and we just
moment.
Yeah, like that held a lot of weight.
Like coming to America.
So I have one statement before we move on to the next episode.
Okay.
I believe this was our first unanimous agreement. I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is the first one we all liked, right?
There's one where we were almost, like, we didn't hate it. This one we all liked.
Yeah.
There's been one other one where we didn't all hate it, though.
It's the most positive we've all been at once, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. If it's not the first, it's definitely... only the second.
This is some positive movement.
So the next episode.
The Cave of Lovers is the closest thing, in my opinion, that we, out of these three episodes, we get to, like, a Monster of the Week episode. It's not, but the Aang Gang has to get around a mountain to get to Omashu, and the Fire Nation is blocking their way. They run into a bunch of hippies, and they go through the mountains and learn a lot about each other and themselves and...
And
hippies. So,
romance.
Dan, was there anything that really, that you liked and didn't like about the episode? And if so, why didn't you like the animals, because they're the best part of the episode?
You know, I'm really glad you started with me on this episode first, because I have opinions on this episode that I actually really enjoyed this a lot, mostly because of the hippie dudes. It actually reminded me of The Great Divide in certain ways.
but done well.
And I think, like, it was done much better. Yes, it was done much better. I liked all the singing in it. I liked the secret tunnel and, like, all the the guy calling Aang Little Arrowhead and Master Arrow. And, like, yeah, the animals definitely were cool, too. The moles. I think that's maybe,
those,
like, only
great.
The second thing we've seen that,
like, the
bends,
mole bears.
Right?
Yeah.
Mole badger.
Well, mole badger. But if we count Appa.
Yeah.
Right.
He bends. Then there's the water thing in, like, episode two.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
it's a sushi type. It's
umami.
Umami.
Unagi. The unagi.
Unagi. Yeah.
Yeah. Umami is a flavor.
And then we see a dragon, which we're gonna assume, because Avatar TiVo rode a dragon, so we're gonna assume that the fire, like, dragons can bend fire.
Yeah. Sure.
And then now we're seeing the mole badgers.
So this is the thing, right? And this is something that I've been waiting to ask you guys about, because I'm really excited about this. I think this is a very cool, heavy piece of world building. And this is why, like, even for a Monster of the Week episode, as you would call it, like, first of all, the monster is fucking great. And second of all, it's huge in terms of world building, because in the details we get that like Omashu and or Omashu, like the two people, learned right. earthbending from the badgers.
Yeah.
And that's a huge bit of information. And does that imply that like the other types of bending were also learned from yes. these weird animals?
Mm.
Did we hear anything like about like, you know, firebending coming from a dragon or something
Not
like that?
Not yet, but keep your eyes open.
But yeah, I haven't read any spoilers, but clearly Josh has.
Nope. No, I think that's based on that. I think we will hear that more animals taught other bending or spirits.
We'll also say, Josh, in your defense of the movie, one of the things that they did well was they tied the obvious fact that the spirit world and the animals are kind of like linked.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like it made a lot more sense at the end of season one when these two fish were like the water spirits, right? So they clearly have a big influence on the moon and all that stuff. So the waterbenders have the little fishies, have the koi fish. Now the earthbenders have the mole badgers, you know.
So they're all clerics, basically. They're summoning the power of the spirits through either animals or themselves to...
Or warlocks.
Yeah.
Because they're slaving themselves to these spirits.
But here's a question. Is like... I thought it was interesting, and it's something that keeps, like, kind of bugging me, is that, like, the koi fish are real regular animals, and they're the most powerful spirits we've seen yet. And then what seemed to be, like, the much more conventional animals in their universe, like, you know, the badger moles and the platypus bears and all this other stuff, which I think we saw another platypus bear in this episode at the circus. All of those seem to be much more sort of regular non-spiritual things, which I think is an interesting
choice. Shut. It's your tiny whale.
It's my tiny whale.
The more powerful a spirit is, the smaller and like more innocuous of the creature. I don't know if we'll see that again or if that was just a one-off thing with the Water Kingdom, but I almost hope that that's more of it. Like, it'd be really cool if like the Fire Nation has like this like a newt or a salamander that's their like
Salamander, that would be fucking great. That would be so cool.
Because like it's like the smallest animals, but they're the ones that like are embody this super powerful concept.
It's like the mythical Pokemon.
Something about like this episode as a monster of the week that got me thinking is like again, when I would talk shit about a lot of the episodes in season one, especially the Monster of the Week, people would always, defend it to me with like, but they move the plot forward. They build the characters. And I'm like,
no, this one built the characters.
Often they didn't.
Built the
and
world.
The plot. Yeah, they usually. And that was the thing is that the monster building, monster fighting episodes last time almost never built the world very much. So they did just feel throwaway. And like, I will argue that a lot of them you could just skip and you'd never feel like you missed anything or left anything out. And now they're not doing that. Now even the Monster of the Week episodes have world building, they have character building, they have plot building, they all matter. And I wonder if, to Pete's argument about nostalgia glasses, that a lot of people who perhaps love Avatar but haven't watched it religiously, at least in however many years since it got off air, are kind of conflating all the episodes. So when they're like, no, the Monster of the Week are important, they're kind of forgetting that some of the first season Monster of the Week episodes are not nearly as well written as these. So they just assume it's like this one. And
yeah.
Like, some of them aren't. And if they watched episode one again or season one again, they might realize like, oh, wow, yeah, I didn't really need this episode and that episode.
One of the things, though, that I liked about this episode that they tried to do with the fortune teller episode is that like so they hinted at Aang being attracted to Katara and you saw him get flustered in this episode and then when they like go to kiss you saw her get flustered and then he immediately ruined his he immediately ruined his like he blew his shot. And as someone who consistently did that through high school and 20s, that was so relatable.
Yeah. When I saw it was called The Lover's Cave, I like immediately went into this episode like, well, I liked the first episode of season two, but now here we're going downhill again. This is going to be another bullshit fortune teller episode where shoehorned love plot. And I was so expecting to hate it. And the fact that the lovers weren't necessarily Aang and Katara, it was Oma and Mashu. And that was way more interesting. And I even didn't hate the way they handled that between Aang and Katara. Because it was, that to me is much more true to life, to like young love, where they're just completely confused and no one even knows how to initiate properly. The fortune teller one was just so like ham-fisted with the like, do you like me? But do you like me? But do you like me? And it's like, do I give a shit? This is like a martial arts show. But this one, it was way better tied in.
Well, it also got enhanced by the fact that the stakes were up. like they were thinking they might die or be lost in that cave, and there was like a clock ticking with the torch. Yeah, so it kind of really
solution to a problem.
Yeah, yeah, gave up this build up to put in the romance alongside of that instead of just purely screwing around and being like, oh yeah, let's all get flirty and play tag in the playground kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And even despite Aang's total fuck up of that moment, they still genuinely care and love for each other, even if it is or isn't romantic, that, like, it right. still worked. Like, so even though she was kind of annoyed, it's like they still trust and believe in each other, which is what, you know, lit up the cave and helped them out. And the fact that they were both so excited about figuring that out, and, like, they kind of knew they did it together, neither of them was super embarrassed about the fuck up, because that wasn't as important.
Yeah, they were able to move forward. And even Sokka, you know, like, with the hippies... Like, I felt like there was some, you know, like, that, this episode, Josh, Sokka was you. Like,
oh,
red
yeah,
spot
yeah,
on his
absolutely.
Forehead at
yeah.
the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely. I was just like, that's Josh. That's just
so
Josh.
So
with the hippies.
I like didn't that, even hate the musicians either. They were yeah, actually funny.
They were funny. Yeah. That guy was definitely, I looked it up. It wasn't Lorenzo Music. It was D. Bradley Baker. But it was D. Bradley Baker doing nice. Lorenzo yeah. Music as best he could. And for any of the millennials listening, Lorenzo Music was the guy who did the voice of Garfield in the old Garfield cartoon show. He was also Peter Venkman in the Ghostbusters cartoon right. show. And, like, he had a very distinctive voice and cadence that was just, like, the laid-back guy. And that's clearly what this guy... I'm sure, I have no question in my mind, I am sure D. Bradley Baker, who is a famous cartoon voice guy, definitely was like, I'm going to do that guy's voice. I'm doing that guy's thing. For this character.
I even loved the arc of Sokka finally picking up the little lute or whatever and being like, being the one to play music and
yeah.
kind of get through that as well and see what was going on. They have not dropped the, like, Sokka is not a bender, but he is just really fucking clever. And even though he gets annoyed at things, like, he is usually right and can figure stuff out, which I really like that they kept that going.
Sokka is Taskmaster. He's just kind of learns everything right away. He's like, oh, what's this, a lute? I saw someone play it for a little while.
Is this the episode where,
like,
he says
from Transformers?
Yeah, yeah. We're like, I don't want to be Katara, or like, Katara's not being the usual wet blanket, so let me be it. Or is that this episode?
Yeah, I think it was either this
where
one.
He throws
the
some
one.
Shade.
Yeah, there's.
Yeah.
So this is all great, and we need to talk about the circus thing too.
Oh, yeah, the subplot, the circus, yeah. Because those girls, whoo!
Yeah, apparently there's
say something, Sean, or are you just bringing it up?
Yeah, you're just bringing it up. I was like,
oh, you're just bringing it up.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I love the manipulation by Zuko's sister of the circus girl was just...
Yeah, she is a piece of shit.
Oh, man. They made her, like, everything... They, like, I am stuttering because I just love her as a villain. Like, compared, like, we still have the puppet master of her father being the, I'm going to use the Star Wars analogy, of the Emperor, you know, like, clearly manipulating the machine. But she is the Darth Vader of, like, I'm going to go forth and hunt down all these little Jedi kids and kill them. You know, she is just so cold and makes me like Zuko more, you know, like.
You know what he's put up with. Because if that's the sibling that his dad loves, it's like, as much of a dick Zuko can be, like, he could never be that fucked up. And it's like, why would you even want to impress your dad who likes this chick? So there's clearly a lot of dysfunction going on.
Yeah.
I got a big question for all of you.
Well, hold on one second then.
Yeah.
It also kind of explains / excuses how shitty he is to Uncle Iroh in the next couple episodes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how was he raised? Holy crap.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you're like, oh, okay, of course you're a huge piece of shit.
Especially because one thing that Sean predicted and that turned out to be true was, remember, he got burned in a fight because he showed, like, honest goodness and nobility, which was clearly seen as, like, weakness. So, like, we know he's got good in him. You know, Iroh clearly knows it and is willing to stay by his side and take a lot of flack from him to, like, help him see it. So, yeah, it tells us a lot. But here's one question I have. One thing I predicted... I think it was an easy prediction, but I still predicted it, was that, like, this season was going to be all about the sister, and then the last season will clearly be fighting Ozai, the dad. But I'm wondering, like, how do you think things are going to end with the sister in this season into the next one? Like, is she going to, like, fuck up getting the Avatar, and by the end of season two, the dad will be like, you're fucking banished too, because you also fucked up? Or will she just, will he be like, you couldn't handle it, so now I'm going to handle it, but she'll still be in good graces with the dad? Like,
which one do you think?
I don't know. Because I feel like if she fucks up getting the Avatar, which will clearly, I think, be the finale of this season, I see the dad kind of throwing her aside, but I don't know how she would take that. So I don't know how it's going to go.
The really exciting thing is I genuinely don't know. Like, you know, like, you could see the writing on the wall with the entire first season as to, like, okay, obviously Iroh and Zuko are going to not bring in, you know, and like, and it's going to be this guy Zhao, and then there's going to be like some sort of old showdown, and then they're going to have to like call in, like, you know, the next big bad. But like, now it's like, I don't know how that's going to shake out. I
have a prediction, and I wonder if I'm going to be right, because I'm still riding the high on my being right about the fishes in the season finale.
That was amazing. Yeah. Well done.
So my theory is that the girl that in the did we learn her name from the circus?
I don't,
I'm sure we did. I don't
probably
remember.
But I forgot it.
I do not remember it.
That she clearly has good in her, and then the girl that she picks up in Umashu also
she
has
feels
some good,
like,
in her. And
I
think
I don't know
that
about the
those
Umashu
two
girl.
Are
I, like, she struck me as pretty shitty.
We'll get to that next episode.
Yeah, I got opinions next when we get to the next episode.
Yeah. But
I'll
defend it, but I think that those two are going to turn on Azula.
On Azula.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
Is that that's the sister's
but,
name?
Yeah. Or, yeah. I want to hear your answer, though, Dan, because I'm still, what do you think is going to end up with Azula? Because she clearly has to fail at the end of the season. If she succeeds, it's the end of the show. So, like, how is that going to affect her deal with her dad in the Fire Kingdom?
I, same as you guys, don't really have a good direction for that just yet. We're still early on, and I want to say, like, she gets her comeuppance and she's, like, dead, but that's too similar to the first season where now Zhao is presumably dead. So I want to go more towards probably what Pete was just saying, that the two other girls might turn on her because they kind of figure out that she's been manipulating them.
But I still want to know how that's going to affect her relationship with the dad. Like,
with the dad.
Is he going to be like, is season three going to be him saying, Azula, come home, and like, you just have to join me and follow my lead? Or is she going to also end up banished? Or
no, I think she'll get banished too.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
If she fails, clearly. I think she would, yeah.
All right. So let's move on to episode 3, Return to Umashu, which now is controlled by the Fire Nation. Everyone's worried about Bumi, where he is.
There he is.
And it's Sean's boy.
That's my guy.
We got to start with Sean on this episode.
Oh, 100%. And so, actually, yeah, I don't feel like we need to really explain it, because Return to Umashu, if, in my opinion, is self-explanatory, other than now it's controlled by the Fire Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and where's Bumi?
So, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, like, this just, like, stuff's moving, like, things are happening, and it's pretty exciting. I don't have any, like, real hot takes here, like, it's just ghetto. Well,
I thought that even though it's a great, I do think it's a great episode, and it's well-written, and I'm really liking the show now, but I thought you might be a little upset that because of the way the plot went, there's a lot less Bumi.
I was a little bummed, and then I was I was extra bummed that Bumi was just a face in a box, and then I realized, that's perfect. Like, that's perfect. Bumi is now, like,
Bumi box?
He's a Bumi box, which
that's
is great.
That's the boom box.
No, that's the subscription service Sean wants to be a part of.
Yeah, I got another book.
Once a month, Bumi box.
Once a month, I get meth head wisdom out of the back of a speeding cop car. That's the way to do it, right? Like, I'm just gonna, like, stand out, like, you know, like on the curb on the third of every month, and a cop car is gonna speed by, and Boomy's gonna lean out the back and be like, never trust a redhead with your Marlboros, and then boom, he's gone. And that's it.
I love that I can hear your wife laughing in the background.
My favorite thing about this episode if I had to pick one big thing, I mean, yeah, again, more world building. It moves a lot. It's really great. Is that I think this was possibly the most empathy we saw out of anyone in the Fire Kingdom, especially like a higher up in the Fire Kingdom.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a much more human Fire Kingdom in this season. And I think that's really cool. The one question I have, okay, here's something. Like at the end, like I was really frustrated. Like, why didn't Aang just like put the baby down and like kind of like he clearly could take off, but like just give them the idea that he was a human being, right? Like, I feel like that really would have paid off if he had been like, yeah, I brought back your kid. I want nothing in return. Goodbye. And just take off, right? I feel like that would have huge dividends down the line if, like, those guys are like, oh, yeah, that's the guy that brought back my kid. I can't shoot fucking flaming cannons at him. Like, that seems like that would be a good idea, but he's sort of Batmaned it instead for
I want to hear Dan's take on my suggestion for that, because normally this is the kind of explanation I would hate, but it could be because Aang's like, he's a kid and he didn't get all of his proper Avatar training because he left, and maybe he's just not quite wise and mature enough to like think of that. Plus, he's probably still afraid of them, even though he knew that they cared more about their kid than like, you know, doing what the Fire Kingdom wanted to do. Yeah. But like, I don't know, does that make sense to you too, Dan? Like, that's kind of what happened there?
That kind of makes sense. I was really more expecting an explanation at the end. I think if Katara was there, we 100% would have got an explanation from her. Like, oh, we didn't mean to steal the baby. You know, it just happened and it's not our fault. And please trust us and don't be dicks in the future. But I mean, I don't know.
Tried that was kind of like our flying cat.
That was kind of like the small, small part of the episode that didn't bother
me. She can't fly
much.
Like Aang though, so.
Yeah, Momo almost got that baby killed like 7 times.
For Momo. Again, Momo for president.
Just sort of remind me of that like Baby Huey cartoon, right? Where like that old Tom and Jerry, no, what was it? Where the bulldog is like following the little kitten.
Kid.
Again, I feel like there's a adherence to the old ways in the world of animation that we're seeing here. Like, even if no child that watches this would appreciate the reference, other animators are going to be like, I see what you're doing. And I thought that was really cool. You know, where you got the little baby and the animal that's trying to keep it from dying. Yeah. You know, that kind
of. Except Momo's actively trying to kill it.
Well, Momo has that, like, cat-like sociopath. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to keep this thing alive just long enough to make things interesting.
Downsides to this episode for me is that we saw the cool mail, like, slides again, where, like, the delivery slides in Omashu.
Yeah, those are fun.
But I really expected the spikes to come back, especially with the kid. We're like, oh, we have to deliver some spikes. You, of course, face them forward.
And then aim at your
child. Yeah.
Let's deliver spears at top speed, point first.
And am I the only one who's also expecting cabbages again to show up, or the kid would hit some cabbages?
We've been
really disappointed.
Really low totally on cabbages.
Cabbages season. Was like the highlight of season one, so you can't just get rid of that.
I think the fascists took over and they cut off. They cut off the mail system.
Cabbages.
They cut off the cabbages.
Cabbages doesn't exist anymore. The whole time? Like,
well,
we
knew it was a cabbage-based economy, so maybe they're trying to demolish the cabbage-based economy by hoarding all the cabbages.
Well, I think that, like, also part of it is that, like, we're also, the reason why there's no spears is because we're finally seeing not a meth head rule this city.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, like, we've got empathetic Fire Lord people who are like, wait a second, guys, you cannot ship spears that way. Might be fine for cabbages, but spears do not go down the rock and roll, like, roller coaster.
Now, speaking of the meth head, though, one thing I also liked about this, and since I fucked up in the beginning and kind of gave away the fact that I've watched more than these three episodes, clearly, is, I think we all have, so it's not going to spoil anything, but I liked that, you know, we're now seeing that Bumi is definitely a lot more wise than we even thought in the first season.
Yeah.
And he's not, you know, he's crazy, but there is, like, a method to it, and I liked how that paid off.
That's true.
Because at the time, it's like, you know, the whole, we need to find someone to listen to the Earth just sounded like a logical thing to say, and I like how it became more than just a logical thing to say.
No, that was cool. So something just dawned on me,
especially because he's a head in a box.
Yeah,
the spear thing.
What was the Pee Wee Herman? What was the?
Oh, he's Jambi.
Jambi.
He's Jambi.
Jambi.
And I love when he laughs as he sends himself back up. Like, I gotta go back.
High mecha crystal hoe.
Right. Like what did the What did the Fire Nation people think when he sent himself back up that slide, like laughing, like, "Oh, hey, I'm back." And it's
could
like,
you know, there was someone who was
why
on
are you here?
Terror.
Yeah, somebody like, must have been like, "Damn, we'd hoped you escaped." Shit.
Right,
yeah.
But like I'm not gonna pick him up. Like, there were like a bunch of guards standing around. Like, I'm not going anywhere near a metal box with like a guy that can clearly and at any point could have just smashed us all with rocks.
Yeah.
And yep. Here he is, waiting for a better opportunity to smash us all with rocks, because he
means there's
fucking
a scene.
Said so, right? Like, that's what he said.
That means there's a scene we didn't see, but I kind of wish we had, where, like, he gets to the top of the slide, he then, like, lifts his chin and lifts up the entire box, and then using earthbending kind of teeters the box to walk himself back into his cell with the fire and guards like, "Oh, for fuck's sake!"
Just the idea among all these guys are like, "Oh, he's just in there because he likes it."
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't have to wipe himself there.
He's
That's
into this. This has been, yeah. We're just doing him a favor this whole time.
This is his kink.
He's... Oh, we are in serious danger. We should all leave great. This
so,
city right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. So, I, if you guys are ready to move on, I was going to bring up the trio of sociopaths.
Yeah, okay, yeah, good, because I was about to bring that up, too. Dan, you go first.
Yeah, that's where I think Sean was kind of leading into this as well earlier, that I think they're all crazy. I think they're all very sadistic and don't have a lot of feeling, and they're probably... I'm surprised they haven't backstabbed each other already. That may come up later, where they all try to plot against each other in like
Ty
some sort
Lee,
of
that's her
rock paper scissors. But yeah, Ty Lee seems very like I don't know. She seems innocent, but I don't trust her either.
Which one is Ty Lee?
She was the
that's
acrobat.
The daughter,
the
right?
Acrobat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, the daughter is May, and like
right,
the daughter.
Right.
Yeah, she's just bored, but. Like
okay.
crushing
she
ants with like her finger.
Yeah, like you know, she's bored when she's not throwing knives at stuff. Like literally, the second the knife has left her hand, she's bored again, and that's upsetting.
Dangerous.
First and foremost, Dan, I can't speak for you, but I can easily speak for Sean, Josh, and myself. We have dated one or all three of those girls.
Oh, ow.
I think everyone has, or their male counterparts, but I think everyone has 100%. One of those.
Yeah.
I'm sure Dan has one too, and at least. Yeah.
I know this is not true, but the way you said it made it sound like it was all the same girl, but.
Josh and I did that.
We did that.
As far as I know, I haven't done that with Sean yet.
As far as I know, I think I've been pretty safe. Maybe close, but not safe.
I feel like there's a lot of dudes who would fit under the Azula category.
Right.
Of,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. No doubt.
Sociopath, psychopath.
Manipulating. Yeah. Gaslighting.
So,
probably in there somewhere.
The reason I'm going to defend May, and thank you for whoever learned their names. Because I love them. But I think May was honestly worried about her brother. Like, yes, she's bored to death, but she clearly has the ability to leave whenever the fuck she wants, because she could accidentally kill everyone around her. So the fact that she stays is she's got some sense of family, and she is honestly worried about her brother. I don't think she could give a shit about her parents. You know, I think that's her redeem. This is why I believe that long term she is going to be redeemed, and I would not be surprised if Sokka and her have a little like, won't they?
Sokka likes the spicy ladies.
Oh, yeah. Clearly. He likes people that turn into fish.
Sokka makes bad decisions.
Yes, exactly.
And one's that kick his ass.
Josh.
Yeah, the one that can kick his ass. Yeah, that's again, that's very me.
That's why I'm saying that. Like, she, don't get me wrong, the girl's touched. Yeah. You know?
I mean, I can see that. I don't think I've seen enough of it for me to have that opinion, but I understand where you're coming from.
That tracks. I don't know if I'd put money on it, but I definitely can see it happening.
I think my theory combined with, I think it was Josh that said that they're going to figure out that that Azula has just been manipulating them.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's going to come back to bite Azula in the ass, and that is going to reform Circus Girl and make the psychopath May be a little bit more like, ugh, really? Like, if you just told me we're going to kill someone, I would have just done it, but you didn't.
Wait, let me ask everyone a question on this. Dan, you tend to be our historian on Avatar here.
Okay.
Did they, like, get approved for 3 seasons, or was this one of those deals where Nickelodeon picked them up for 1 season, and then it did well, so they got the second and third seasons?
I couldn't tell you.
Sean,
we're
going
to have to research that.
Somebody must know.
I mean, again, I'd be a little surprised that they got the second season, but I know that my opinion is not the popular one there, and I'm still surprised that everyone I know got through the first season to the second season, because, like, Sean and I, our sister-in-law is a huge fan of the show, and she said that her family actually started watching somewhere in the middle of the second season and then went back and watched the first, and I feel like if I had done that, I would have been like, ooh, this isn't as good, but, like, I probably wouldn't also have hated it nearly as much, but I feel like I personally, if I had watched season one in, like, 2005, I would have gone three seasons, and I would have been like, this show's garbage, and I never would have gotten through it, unless maybe friends of mine later on were like, oh, no, second season, it finally got good, but all of that said, I feel like they must have watched the first season, and while they probably didn't hate their own creation as much as I did, they clearly watched it and went, our pacing is not fucking great. And yeah, like, we forgot to mention how important the fish and these spirits and moon was until the very end. And it seems like they learned a lot of these lessons. And this season, off the bat, they must have had a big-ass writers meeting. And they're like, okay, we're foreshadowing things. We're always having world building. We're always making sure everything pertains to moving forward. But it just feels like it learned from the mistakes of the first season very much. And I'm kind of wondering, Sean, especially your screenwriter take on that.
Yeah, and again, I feel like, you know, the first season also felt like it had a lot of the standard executive hamstringing going on, where there were certain rules that they were given. And then, like,
wait, once... so you think that maybe once it did well, they were like, hey, we made a good season, leave us the fuck alone now.
Yeah, that's what I think is more likely, is that, like, they were like, okay, now we know we can do this without having to make it a certain type of thing where it has to be, like, something where, you know, like I kept saying, like, everything about the first season, and I think a lot of your problems with it, were based on the fact that every single episode had to zero out, you know, it had to go back to nothing actually having been accomplished or gained. And now they're at the point where they could sort of say, okay, we're going to move forward now, and we have the clout to tell you that that's what we're going to do.
I also wonder if they did the Matt Stone, Trey Parker thing of, like, here's, like, you know, like, let's throw some ideas that they're definitely going to say no to, so that way we can get the other stuff that
that's a good plan. Aang commits a war crime. No? Okay, Aang gets fire powers. All right, great.
Saying, like, especially these last two episodes, the 2 and 3 that we saw, they return to Omashu. So it helps to build on the first season, where I feel like they just took, like, a table and, like, threw dice all over it and said, all right, all these little points are all separate from each other, but we're going to hit them. And then now they're starting to kind of go back and tie everything together and revisit things and add more lore to it, so that, like, it has meaning. You know, like, everyone loved Boomy in the first season, but what's this place? Like,
yeah.
Once we know more about it, then we become more attached to it.
I have two things to say to that, Dan. One, that was the most nerdy description of how to build a world in a role-playing game.
It's how I've built maps before.
That's how everyone does it. If you're going to build for non-nerds, really, why are you listening to this? But that's how you build a map to have your adventure go through. Yeah, I think I'm also curious to that point, Dan, to see if, as the season progresses, does it make season one more palatable, right? Like, because now we're going back to Omashu, and we've seen that, and then we get... Also, in the next three episodes, we get a brief... I also, like, Josh watched them all. To get a brief glimpse of yet something else they went to, I think, like, in episode 2 or 3 of the first season. And so, like, we're clearly getting callbacks to the first season. And so is it going to build what happened in the first season up to be more palatable in retrospect?
Knowing that Filoni, I don't think, writes anymore for it. Didn't he, like, leave for Clone Wars?
He left Clone Wars, yeah.
But it's funny because this almost feels like Clone Wars, to your point, where it's like, oh, let's fix what we fucked up in the past by writing it back in now. Because that's what Clone Wars was for episodes 2 and 3 of Star Wars. It was just like, let's make these characters less shitty and explain a lot of missing plot points that George Lucas pushed through too fast. And I do find that kind of interesting, but I don't think it's going to save the first season, at least for me personally. But it's something I find interesting to that point that Dan made as well about them, like, moving it forward, is that on these three episodes, and again, admitting that I saw the next three, I feel like there's at least certain points of the story, like the main plotline with the Aang gang, that you could sort of watch out of order and it wouldn't mess you up too much. But I feel like Zuko and Iroh's story right now is laser focused in a straight line, And if you don't watch these episodes in the right order, that will confuse you, because like everything that they do leads them to the next step. And like Zuko is clearly growing each time. I mean, especially like everything with the sister. If you didn't see the first season episode first of this, sorry, the second season episode one first, a lot of these other episodes would kind of throw you off because you wouldn't know much about her and why she's so important and everything she teaches you about Zuko. And we got that all in like episode one. So I think now it does feel much more linear and on purpose. And I don't know, I think it just makes it a much better show.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Anything else before we wrap up this episode?
Fuddy Duddy Uncle.
Okay. So to sign up for your booty box, you're going to need to go to www.boobybox.com.
Don't do that.
But do subscribe to our group and our page. And
check us out on Twitter at The Hype Benders, our Facebook group, which is The Hype Benders as well. And maybe we'll set up an Instagram. I doubt it, but who wants to see pictures of us? No one.
No one. Yeah, no one. Yeah, we are horrible.
I want to see Pete dressed up as Aang, and that's it.
I want to dress up as Momo. I don't want to dress up. I clearly am a furry.
You know what? I take it back.
You got the head for Aang, though.
Or what if you dress up as Sokka as Momo, like he did? Wait, did that happen yet?
And for anyone who doesn't know us yet, Sean just is Boomy, so you don't really need to dress him up at all.
Yeah.
With slightly better
teeth. But you need the box.
Slight.
Yeah. Oh, God. Sean, now you have a Halloween costume. We just got to put you in a refrigerator box, cut a hole in the top.
Yeah, just stick my face.
Costume done.
And just furiously masturbate while dispensing your thing. Remember to drive on the parkway and park on the driveway. Like, yeah, that'll be.
Are you touching yourself? Like, no, there's a coon in here.
Oh, God. We're gonna end the episode now.
Part of the stipulation of my capture was that they filled this box with crickets. Tickly, tickly crickets.
Why has this sideshow not been made? This is the spinoff, Sean.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm all about this, the Boomy show.
Sean, I expect you to pitch this, and if you don't, you're a bad person.
I will.
All right.
Okay. With that.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We are the Hype Benders. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
See ya.
Bye.